Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. As you can tell by that intro from Matt Hawkins, this episode is another Top Cow Chronology episode. It's also our Top Cow Thursday episode, so those kind of go hand in hand. And as I said, it's been a little while since we've done one of these, so just to remind everybody what the Top Cow Chronology is, there's a user that goes by the name of Condor over on the Comic Vine forums, and I came across a reading order for the entire Top Cow Artifact universe, and I had always wanted to read that stuff. You know, Michael Turner's my favorite comic artist of all time. I had this giant Witchblade omnibus I had never cracked open, and, you know, big fan of Top Cow with things like Think Tank, and I think Wildfire was out at the time, so I thought it would be a great time to dive into the Artifact corner of the Top Cow universe, and I use this reading chronology to do that. And what's interesting about the reading chronology, so it's not a publication chronology or a publication reading order, so in other words, the books aren't listed in the order that they were published, but rather in the order that you should read them. For example, the first few issues in the chronology and the reading order are set in ancient Egypt. So as you read them, you move forward in time. So currently we are on a series that's called Witchblade Shades of Grey. It's actually a crossover between Dynamite and Top Cow. And let me give you the creative team really quick here. It's written by Leah Moore and John Repion. The art in this issue is by Walter Giovanni, and the colors are by Romulo Fajardo Jr. So we saw in the first two issues that the art was handled by Steven Segovia, and now we see that Walter Giovanni's taking over. You know, I'm a huge fan of Steven Segovia, but again, this was for issues one and two, some of his earlier work, and I can definitely tell he's grown as an artist since then. His most recent work for Valiant, I think he's done some work on Green Lanterns or Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps for Marvel. You can definitely see some improvement in his rendering. That being said, I am a fan of Walter Giovanni. I do think the art in this issue is incredibly well done. I think I first saw Walter Giovanni's art on his run of Red Sonja from Dynamite that he did with writer Gail Simone. So I've always been a fan of his. And in comparison to the recent issues with Segovian art, Giovanni's art's a little more clean, and he tends to vary the angles or the perspective in panels, or layout within panels, if you want to call it that, more so than Segovia does. But again, it's really six of one, half a dozen of another. They're both incredible artists. And Fajardo Jr., you know, I've talked about his incredible coloring work on the Wonder Woman Rebirth title, I should say. And I didn't realize he'd been working in comics for so long. I don't recall seeing his name until I saw it on that Wonder Woman title. So it's nice to see him getting some recognition. I've heard his name more and more lately, and in very good context. So I definitely want to give him credit for doing a great job. I don't necessarily see a difference between his color work now or his color work in this title, which was, let me give a date on that. Let's see, 2007, so 11 years ago. I don't see a marked difference to my eye. Granted, I'm no colorist, but his color work here is just as fantastic as it is on the Wonder Woman title that where he first came to my attention. So I'm sorry that I didn't know the name sooner. He's definitely a colorist I pay attention to now. So, all right, well, let's get into the issue itself. As you may or may not be able to tell, if you haven't been following along with the chronology, by the title, Witchblade Shades of Grey, it's a crossover between Witchblade and Dorian Gray from literature. And in this issue, we actually get a bit of an origin of Dorian Gray, so I'm not going to explain because I'll get to it in the issue. And as we saw in the last issue, in issue 2, Sarah had gone to Dorian Gray's apartment because she seemed to know him, or at least the Witchblade seemed to know him. Because even though this is 2007 when this was published, the story actually takes place 95, 96. Supposedly it takes place after the first volume of Witchblade, which is issues 1 through 8. So Sarah, at this time, Sarah Pizzini, the bearer of the Witchblade, is still very green. She's only just gotten the Witchblade. She's only just defeated Irons, Jeremy Irons, who was trying to take the Witchblade from her and his sort of right-hand guy. They ended up coming to blows, actually, Nottingham. So she's still unsure of herself, both as the bearer of the Witchblade and doesn't trust the Witchblade 100%, not quite sure what her powers are. So she's, as I said, still very, very green. So Sarah went to Dorian Gray's apartment looking for answers, agreed to go and meet with him. And she still doesn't understand why she seems to be attracted to this guy, seems to want to be close to him, other than trying to get answers. She knows she doesn't trust him, though, so she's having a hard time. You know, she knows the Witchblade knows him. The Witchblade doesn't trust him. So why is she there? So Dorian's trying to set her at ease, saying, you know, we need to act quickly. They're trying to catch a murderer, as we saw in the first couple issues. And as Dorian says that, Sarah's reply is, we can't do anything until you tell me what's going on. I mean, isn't Dorian Gray a character in a book written by some old British guy? And Gray responds, close, the picture of Dorian Gray, would you like to see it? And then he takes her into a room and shows her the, you know, the fabled painting, and he's basically a desiccated corpse in it. And he tells her the story of being very young at one point and being very vain, and although he didn't, and sort of innocent, he didn't know greed or pride or fury at that time. But when he does finally look upon the painting, he sees very little of his innocence there. He compares himself to Narcissus. You know, he gazed upon the likeness of himself and immediately fell in love with himself. Basically, pride and arrogance overtook him, he says. And he vowed that day that he'd give his soul to stay as young and as faultless in that painting. And he says, somewhere, somehow, some god or demon heard my oath and answered my black prayer. So basically what happens is he stays the same age and the painting ages. And that's why it looks like a desiccated corpse. Sarah doesn't quite buy it. She's like, I'm supposed to believe in a magic painting. And what does this have to do with the murders? And Dorian's like, wait, you don't believe the magic of the painting, yet you bear the Witchblade. He's like, what the heck? You should be believing me. But he doesn't necessarily argue with her. He starts talking about what happened after to him. He says his heart blackened overnight, became a terror. He claims that Mr. Hyde, Steel-Heeled Jack, and Jack the Ripper were all kind of echoes of his malevolence. Doesn't say if he actually was those characters or if the legends that sprung up those characters were based on exploits that Dorian Gray performed, but it seems like perhaps that's the case. And so Sarah's like, well, suppose I buy this, couldn't you break the curse? And Dorian said, actually, I tried. He tried to stab the painting, and what happened was the knife went through the painting, but Dorian was the one that was wounded. And as he lay dying, bleeding out, his friend, Le Comte de Saint-Germain, found him. So the Count of Saint-Germain. And when he awoke, he was on a magnificent cabin on an ocean liner. They'd left England. They were heading for a new start. And Sarah's like, so he saved you? And Dorian responds, ah, he rescued me. I was really beyond saving. And Sarah's like, okay, so you've been through some crap. It still doesn't tell me why am I here. And Dorian responds that, well, the Witchblade remembers him, so you should believe what I tell you is the truth. And Sarah's response is, how can the Witchblade remember anything? It's just a thing. And Dorian's like, well, it seems like it does. I haven't been around the blade long enough to know for certain. And then the scene switches to kind of the aftermath of what we saw in the final pages of issue 2, which was Sarah's partner, tracking down who they thought was the murderer, who is actually the Count, the other immortal in the story. And he seems to have some ability to kind of put a spell over people. And he had these two women with him, scantily clad women, and they ended up attacking the two plainclothes police officers that were there. They were killed, and the Count, in this guise, this other person's body he's taken over, apparently took Sarah's partner because she's nowhere to be seen. The other two plainclothes detectives are like, hey, there's gunshots, but there's no evidence of anyone hit. You know, the two plainclothes officers aren't in very good shape, but the other two girls, which were the two that were previously under the Count's spell, are whacked out. They're not snapping out of it, but the other two cops are messed up pretty bad. So they say, well, let's head over to Sarah's apartment and check it out. She's supposedly, this is her case. So they jump in the car and they head that way. And one of the officers or detective says to the other, they probably shouldn't have let that gray guy go. And the other responds, you think he has something to do with this? And the first says, well, he's mixed up in it somehow. So meanwhile, we see Dorian's partner is under the spell of the Count, and she seems to be getting herself ready for something, getting herself dressed up. Meanwhile, back at Dorian Gray's apartment, Sarah's like, okay, I'm still wondering how talking to you is going to help us solve these murders. I'm a cop. I should be out there hunting for the killer. Dorian's like, I understand it's complicated. And Sarah's like, I've had enough. You need to tell me everything or I'm leaving. And Dorian says, I'm trying to explain it. It's complicated. And he talks about arriving in Marrakech, and the Count had explained it all to him in great detail. The Count was immortal as well, and he was sent as a guide to help him. I think Dorian on some level knew that wasn't the case. They were just, they were living it up, but he was young and he was confused and he needed fellowship, and the Count seemed to understand. So they were pretty disreputable. They eventually ended up in Paris just because of the reputation it had for being a party town, I guess. And one night they're in this burlesque, and a woman is serving them drinks, and the Count comes on pretty strong, and the woman's like, I'm just here to serve you drinks. And the Count says, hey, you are here to serve us in any manner we see fit. And we see that the woman's actually wearing the witchblade. But Dorian rises to her defense and says, leave her alone. It's too early for all that. And eventually they're drunk and they're leaving the burlesque. And Dorian makes an excuse and says, I forgot my hat. And the Count says, we can get another one tomorrow. It's fine. But Dorian's like, no, it's my favorite hat. I'm going to go back and get it. But what he really wants to do is, he felt guilty, actually. He felt some kind of connection with this woman that was bearing the witchblade. And so he went back to actually apologize to her. And as he follows her in this alley, they hear someone calling for help. And we see that there's a man about to be mugged. And the woman, this woman who was serving the Count and Dorian, actually is the bearer of the witchblade, as I mentioned. And Dorian witnesses her saving this man. And he confronts her, says, you saved him. And we find out that her name was Bernadette, and she taught Dorian that responsibility, that Dorian himself had a responsibility to his fellow man. And so Sarah's like, well, what happened next? And Dorian's like, she died somehow. I don't know how, the Count. And we get all of a sudden the witchblade yelling out, liar, because it does seem like Dorian is hiding something. Kind of stutters, she died, I'm not sure, the Count. And Sarah says, I better leave. The witchblade's speaking right to her, saying, deceiver, don't trust him, do not believe him. Sarah's like, it's getting late, I better go. And Dorian's like, well, a little sudden, everything okay? And Sarah says, I'm fine, I just need to leave, I don't think we should see each other again. And Dorian says, what are you, we're in this together, like we should be partners. And Sarah responds that he should just stay away from her. Or Sarah says, no, stay away from me. And Dorian's like, I really don't understand. And then Sarah's leaving and she's like, what's been going on? How could I believe this guy? He was like mesmerizing me or something, putting me under his spell. If it hadn't been for the witchblade snapping me out of it, I almost believed all that crap. And she gets in the elevator and she leaves. And she thinks, man, what is it about these men in my life? Don't they know that only a woman can wield the Witchblade? Why are they trying to put me under their spell, you know? And she's referencing Irons, basically, and the story from Witchblade 1 to 8. And then she starts thinking about the fact that having the Witchblade is like having a target on her neck, and she just kind of lost her own thoughts, so much so that as she's leaving, she walks right past her partner, who is all gussied up, for lack of a better word. And by the time she realizes, the elevator doors have closed, and she's heading up to Dorian Gray's apartment. And indeed, she knocks and says, "Hello, Dorian." And he says, "Good evening, Detective Burns." And he seems very surprised. He's asking, what does he owe the pleasure of the visit? And Detective Burns, Sarah's partner, says, "Don't you like the way I look? Come over here." And Dorian's not having it. He's like, "What game are you playing, Detective? Answer me." And then we hear a voice from the doorway saying, "Now, now, that's no way to treat a lady." And it's the Count in the body that he has taken over, saying that he brought Detective Burns as a gift, and it's time for them to put their differences aside. And next issue, we have the final curtain. So one more issue to go. This issue didn't have the amount of action that the first two issues did. I think the only real action is the double page spread that showed Bernadette, the bearer of the Witchblade, sometime in the 1880s, I guess, 1870s. Her fight in the alley is about the only action there is. It's a lot of exposition. It's background on Dorian. It's Sarah talking about her faith in the blade, or who should she believe, struggling to. It seems like instinctually she wants to trust Dorian, but the Witchblade doesn't trust him, and she recently was betrayed by somebody she felt attracted to. It seems like there's some attraction there to Gray, so you can understand that. Interesting take on the story of Dorian Gray, changed around a little bit by Moore and Repion to kind of suit this narrative. So that was interesting. And again, the art from Walter Giovanni is really incredible. The color work is solid. So all in all, a good issue. And, I talk a lot about pacing in comics and how you can't go pedal to the metal all the time. Issue one had a good bit of action. Issue two had a lot of action. So this is kind of like the lull right before the final act, where we're going to get a ton of action in issue four, is my guess. So I'm enjoying this crossover title more than I thought I would. And, it sounds bad, but I just, typically in my experience, I haven't enjoyed Dynamite books that I've read in the past very much. Maybe with the possible exception of that Red Sonja title that I mentioned earlier. Especially when they do a lot of these licensed books, or they'll do properties that are in the public domain, like Dorian Gray, will adapt them. And they haven't been that good to me. Usually they have really good art, and the stories are just a little tired, or just don't grab my attention. I know that's, just a personal preference, but just based on that, based on the fact that it was Dorian Gray, a literary character that's in the public domain, how much can you really do with them? Just about everybody knows the story of the painting and everything. But I have to hand it to Moore and Repion. They've done a great job of making him seem like a fully fleshed out character, using some of the background from the book, but not being completely beholden to it. And so it's a good mixture. Sarah, for her part, the characterization doesn't seem completely spot on to what we saw in issue 1 through 8 of Witchblade. She seems a little bit more tentative in this series than issues 1 through 8. I mean, coming out of issue 8, having defeated Irons and Nottingham, she was really kind of coming into her own and kind of exuding confidence. And I know this was written way after, and trying to fit it into that time and into that narrative. And I guess it's possible you could chalk it up to, You know, she felt confident at the end of issue 8 right after she won that battle, but then having time to reflect. Or you could maybe chalk it up to the effect Dorian Gray's having on her. So it's not, she's not so out of character that it pulls me out of the story, but she does seem to be second guessing herself a lot as far as, should I believe the Witchblade? Should I not believe the Witchblade? What am I doing here? Why am I talking to this guy? Why am I attracted to him? That whole kind of thing. So again, she just seemed like she had a little more backbone, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word. A little more assertive, I guess. A little more self-confident in Witchblade's issues 1-8. So, again, it's not a deal breaker. Just would have been interesting to talk to Moore and Repion and ask them, you know, did they read a lot of the Witchblade around that time? Or, you know, who were they kind of getting their characterization cues from? I would be interested to know that. So anyway, that's about all there is for issue 3 of Shades of Grey. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining me. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all previous episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with all our releases and convention coverage on those platforms. Once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.